This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to Breaking Ground, a podcast about earth-moving machinery and characters in the industry. Both your hosts work for TerraCat, New Zealand's Caterpillar machinery dealer. I'm Richard Clark.
And I'm Marty Turek. In this podcast, we hear stories from a wide range of people, and today we're introducing Bill Hurlstone. Bill is a very well-known figure in New Zealand contracting industry. From his early beginnings as an apprentice mechanic in the late 1950s to having Hurlstone Earthmoving acknowledged as having the largest cat fleet in New Zealand, Bill's seen a lot in his time. We're looking forward to having him share a few stories with us from years gone by, and it's a pleasure to have you in the studio today. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, Bill, take us back to your formative years growing up. Tell us about those early years and from where that mechanical interest came from that you had through the rest of your life.
Well, I go back to my childhood, I suppose. I was the fourth child of five of us, and my parents had 30 acres in Egmont Village and milked 12 cows by hand. And I used to go down and wind the separator up to separate the cream from the milk and take it out to the cream truck that came along. So boiled the jug down there in the mornings as well. But from there, I went to Egmont Village School, primary school, and then first year pupil at Englewood High School. And then when I left there, my dad got me apprenticeship with W.R. Phillips in New Plymouth, the Humber and Hillman agency. So I did 9 years there, 4.5 years, got my A grade ticket, and then stayed another 4.5 years. Towards the end of that 9 years, I was doing part-time work for a contractor in Egmont Village, Don Marsh, with a 9U D6 Caterpillar. And I'd go to work for them in the weekends, but wasted a lot of time, I thought, with talking rather than working, so wasn't very profitable.
So, anyway. that's where it all sort of started. Now, and I understand a train ride and passing a Gough Gough and Hamer billboard is a fond memory from those very early days.
Yes. Whanganui had anniversary day, they used to run a train from New Plymouth to Whanganui for the day. And we went down a couple of times and go past the Gough Gough and Hamer billboard with Caterpillar on it, and it always stuck in my, something attracted me to it anyway. And I wrote to them because we were doing a project at school, and they sent this A4-sized brown envelope with all these Caterpillar machines on, and I treasured that like it was the best gift I'd ever had. Well, remember those days, that happening.
And I suppose that was the first time maybe having a bit of interaction with the Cat product all those years ago.
Yes, was.
Can you remember what some of those machines were that were in that envelope?
Oh, God. Motor scrapers.
Yep.
A single engine one, I remember. And loaders. Like, I don't know whether 920s then or what they were, but yeah. And graders. Yeah, that's about it, I think.
Yeah, we see those sort of things still floating around as some of the old history and memorabilia pops out. So.
Yes.
So you sort of said you did your apprenticeship with W.R. Phillips. So you started that It's about 19 or late 1950s, 58?
58.
So what do you sort of remember about your apprenticeship time and what was that sort of like? I did my apprenticeship in Taranaki as well, so it's sort of interesting to compare the two over the test of time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was so grateful to have a job, and I remember getting a best pair of overalls when I started and cycling around on this bike with a basket on the front to pick up parcels from Merv Lucas or wherever. Proud as, you know. But but then you get sent on to get a long rope or a sky hook that so naive about that you go to the spare parts for something they've asked you to get that's just having you on. Anyway, that's part of growing up, I suppose.
And it still happens in apprenticeships now as well.
I was going to say, it should bring some memories back there, Marty.
So. Yeah. So you then, after you sort of said you moved from W.O. Phillips and worked at the same time as you were doing your apprenticeship with Don Marshall, or was it afterwards that you sort of moved on to work with Don Marshall?
I did some work before I left W.O. Phillips for him. And then they asked me to come work full-time, so that's when I left there because I wanted to be outside rather than in the pit with a light when the sun was shining outside. But
yeah, I think that transition still doesn't change from everyone wanting to move out into the field and work in the field and stuff like that. It definitely has its appeals and sort of different machinery and stuff like that. So tell us a bit more about the D6 that Don had.
Well, it was a donkey start motor on it, petrol, so you had to fire that up before you fired the diesel up. And now and again it wouldn't go, so you would be pulling hard on the thing without success, but there was always something wrong that why it wouldn't go. But if you did happen to get a belt off the thing, more of that magneto used to fire you up. If you got a shock off that you'd just about do the work yourself. And it had if you want to angle the blade, you had to get out and turn the turnbuckles each side. Yeah. They were very nose heavy, so if you were working on soft ground, which we were, filling in creeks and things, like from the mountain down, there was all these streams and creeks that got either piped or filled over. Mm-hmm. So the farmer gained more ground. That was the reason for all doing it, and make it easier to work with tractors. But if you went an inch too far, nose went down when you went back, and it even went further down when you pulled the clutch to go back. You'd just about bug it, you see. Sometimes you could push the hydraulic blade down a little bit and spin the tracks to get a bit of dirt under the tracks at the front, but 9 times out of 10 that didn't work. So you'd be there working by yourself, and if a farmer went to milk or get him to leave his tractor there, and you could bury the tractor's wheels and then hook the winch rope on and slowly ease yourself back if you were lucky enough. You soon learnt not to go too far, because one spin too many and you were in trouble. And when you're in trouble, you're not making money, so you learnt quite quickly, I thought.
Yes. So it was mainly rural contracting sort of stuff that you did with Don Marsh?
Well, yes, and worked on the first pipeline, the Kapuni to New Plymouth oil and gas pipeline.
Nice.
On a dry hire basis. $7 an hour we were getting dry hire. They supplied the fuel, and but it was quite good money, really, because quite often we'd be hanging on to a track grip digger, which was a digger on the back of a tractor, what they used on residential subdivisions and digging from sewer pipes and things, on good ground, all right, but trying to scratch a trench through a stream with boulders and stones and didn't. So we had used to hang on to this tractor to stop it slipping back when it was trying to dig, but it couldn't dig much anyway. But yes. So it was a pretty easy on the machine. I just had to sit there, just looking back with the winch rope on this Yeah, so that did farm work as well as that work. And also, that was around Carpini to New Plymouth. I also worked on the pipeline from White Cliffs at Mount Messenger, really. That was on the gas pipeline that went north to Auckland.
Nice.
And we had the first child, Dean, was in the carry cot up there with us, the wife and myself. Those days, that was Christmas 1969.
Oh, yes. About. So was that about the first time that you went out and did or started contracting for yourself at that stage?
Yes, September 69 I started.
So what was sort of the main reasons that you decided to go and do that yourself?
Because Don Marsh was not going so well financially, he said. And I think I told you about it. He stopped me one morning when I was going to work because I lived in this farmhouse, my wife and I did. So I decided that I thought if you could work and keep going, you probably could make a dollar or... And we'd saved up. I think I paid $7,000 for the D69U and diesel Land Rover, so...
Yeah, so that was your first machine, wasn't it?
Yes.
That was a D6B?
9U.
Oh, yes, yep. So what was the story around that machine?
Well, it was one of two that Don had, but mm-hmm. I thought it was the better one of the two, so that's the one I bought.
And so that was what started you out in contracting and working with that unit?
Yes, and Don bought those from Don Wilcox in Pitaru, who must have, I don't know where he got them from, where the ex-ministry or works or whatever, but he must have restored them a bit and then unsold them.
Yes. And so that led you into, you talked about that oil and gas pipeline at Capuni. So that was the first project that you sort of worked on when you were contracting by yourself?
Yeah, that was a lot further on.
Yep.
Yeah, I did a lot of work before that, got to that stage, but that was the first job over $1 million the company got.
Oh, yes. So tell us a bit more about that, I suppose, that Capuni project that you did work on, I suppose, initially. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, the $1 million was a lot of money then. I can't remember which year it was, but it wouldn't be hard to find that out, but... Yes, our first job over $1 million, so that was on the radio, and mm-hmm. we were pretty proud about that, and the job turned out pretty good. It was a English company called Capital Plant International, and Jim Ashcroft was the manager or boss here, but very good people to work for, and they were happy with us, with what we did. So, yeah, we went on from there to the methanol plant in the Waitara Valley. We did the site works for that. So, we had a dearer price than another competitor, a well-known competitor, a big company, and we still got the job. So, I thought that was pretty good.
So you'd sort of start to make quite a good reputation for yourself. And so was that the sort of start of Hillstone Earthmoving was there, or did that sort of, where did it sort of change from contracting to earthmoving? Was it with those sorts of projects or?
Well, I did a job for the Taranaki County on Henwood Road. That I had the 9U D6 and then HD6EP, which and Alice Chalmers I told you about then, so... That was sort of one of the first contracts we got, but didn't have very many staff then, but it just built up.
Built up and grew, and I can imagine that the fleet of machines sort of grew quite a bit as well. So
yes.
As you started to add more and more machines, what were some of the reasons that you chose CAT? Does it take us back to that sort of the brown envelope with the CAT machines, or was there more to it than that?
Oh, well... The second machine I bought was an HD6 EP Alice Chalmers, which I think I mentioned. Hardly went to it. It was second hand, but I hardly went to a farmer's place without something going wrong with it. It's true. And so I was, while it was quite well balanced and easy to, because it was power shift against the old manual clutch, it was not reliable, and just the Caterpillar gear seems to be superior, much superior, I thought. And so it proved with the D6B that I bought, the third machine I bought from the, I think, remember, two catchment board. And that was a very, very good machine. It was a kind on your pocket, best machine you could have on your pocket. And the D5 came out at the same time, power shift, but this thing would burn like half the fuel because of gear drive.
Yep.
So I had both after a while, but, and it had a winch on it and hydraulics for a hydraulic scoop, so I bought the hydraulic scoop as well. And then we got into subdivisions and roading and just business grew, I suppose.
Yeah. Grew and grew from there.
Yeah.
So that, I suppose, having the CAT product was one element of it. How did you find the local support of the Gough branch? Was that a key part of your decision in sort of going with Caterpillar as well, and maybe the people that you're working with at the branch level too?
Yes, well, I mean, my experience had been when Don Marsh with the Gough's parts in Palmerston, you could ring them up. I think as late as 4 o'clock, and parts would generally be in the letterbox by 6:30 the next morning. That's in Upland Road and out of Inglewood, which is pretty good service.
Mm.
I think came up on the rail car, the parts. And not very often they didn't have what you wanted. So Clary McNee was the branch manager, and Pat Ryan was the parts man. Just rang them up and told them what you wanted. Yeah.
Sounds like they looked after you pretty well.
Very well.
Yes.
So with those projects, how did you sort of get into them? Was it sort of a tender process and there was quite a bit of competition? I know you spoke about getting the tender over someone else, but is it sort of quite heated back then or?
Yes, I forget who the main opposition was for the well sites, but there was a fella, Doug, from Petrocorp. And then I got a relationship with him, so they'd want a well site done somewhere, and they'd just ring us up and say, they'd put a peg in the ground, say we want to drill here, and they'd need an area so big flat, and then roading to it. And so they'd work like that for quite a few years, and then they had a fella, Jago, came into Petrocorp that changed things a bit. Relationship changed, but we did a lot of work prior to that.
So I can imagine there's a fair few sites when you drive around Taranaki that would stand out to you, and you'd pick your ones that you know quite well.
Yeah, probably forgot a lot of the drilling sites, but done a lot of road projects as well that are still standing well now, some of them 30 years since we did them.
Well, that's very impressive. Are there any other sort of key projects, sort of roading drill sites? Is there anything else that sort of stands out for you all these sort of years later on and that sort of thing?
We did the, well, when the think big projects came along, Muldoon instigated that, and that's when they found the oil and gas in Taranaki. So they had to bring in all this heavy machinery and stuff from overseas for the plant, and they had to prepare a road from New Plymouth to the site, which is north of Waitara. So we were involved with the northern outlet right in New Plymouth and the Waitara bypass. Big jobs. We had six excavators on one job, but three of them yo-yoing stuff from the bottom to platform up again and onto a motor scraper to cut away the dump because the stuff was very wet. So doing the Northern Outlet project was a fella, what the hell was his name? Jack Kettlewell was a New Plymouth engineer, district engineer, and this was his pet project, this Northern Outlet. We were chosen to be part of it. So he used to run that like it. He was running, he was trying to organise your man and everything because he was so... This was his project. Anyway, I remember him coming out to Egmont Village one morning. He was there before 6 o'clock knocking on the door. He was upset about something. And he used to get so mad. Anyway, this morning he left in such a hassle, a huff, that he went down the road in his yellow Cortina, down the Egmont Village, Dunn Street, round the left-hand, sharp left-hand corner with his door still open. Anyway, I don't know where we didn't fall out, but...
He probably didn't have a seatbelt on back then either, did he?
Another day he came there and he was shouting, you know, he was in the trench about something. We were just as enthused about doing the job as he was. There was nothing wrong, but he liked to sort of poke his nose in with your stuff. He realised the next day he'd done wrong, so he did come and apologise. Yeah, so that's Jack.
Any other projects in that sort of Taranaki region over those, I suppose, 70s and maybe early 80s that you remember?
Oh, well, we've done work on Awakino Gorge and Mount Messenger, and pretty much we did the Waitara Bypass, Urinui Bypass, Waiau Bypass. We've done that and a lot of roading projects.
And a lot of kit gear. Yes. Doing the work on them as well.
Yep.
Mm. So tell us a little bit about the growth of Hillstones, I suppose, going through those years, and then the business had a focus between Taranaki and Auckland. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, when Roger Nomitz came in, he was the Minister of Finance in the Labor government. And he could see that the country was going down the scuppers, pretty much.
That was 1984, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, things were going across the wharf were costing three times what they should have, and just almost standstill. And so he took the subsidies off the farmers, and that was a huge blow for the farmers at the time. So that worked pretty much. Came to a standstill then at that point. So it was either find some work elsewhere or sink. Mm. There's nothing else. What he did was the right thing at the time for the country. And there's probably no other way. I'm a National Party person, but what he did for the economy at that time was saviour, I think, in the long run. A lot of people criticised him, but I thought he did. The thing was right, the thing to do. So I went to Auckland and I found a job with the Manukau City Council at a subdivision on Redoubt Road. So we established, bought a house in Browns Road and shifted staff up there and employed local people as well. And then we had got a depot at Takanini, and we became one of the major players eventually in Auckland, worked all over Auckland on subdivisions, residential and industrial. So that was our saviour going to Auckland.
And I suppose by that stage you would have had a decent fleet of excavators in the Hillstone fleet by that stage.
Yes.
You know, working on those sort of jobs.
We did.
Mm.
Can't remember how many now, but quite a few.
And I suppose once you got to Auckland the business was growing, there would have been some pretty key projects that you were involved with there, maybe some really big subdivision developments. Tell us some stories about some of those, because obviously the scale of them would have been fairly major at the time.
Yes, well, we shifted 1 million metres on between Redoubt Road and another road where the dump site was. I can't remember what that road's called now. But between those two, it was where the school is. We did a retirement village earthworks, a residential subdivision and industrial subdivision. So I think we were there about 3 or 4 years on that project alone. But did all the palms and residential subdivisions over different parts of Auckland. Palm Heights and Palm something else and Palm this before. It used to be Universal Homes, but it was bought by an Australian company. So we just had built good relationships with the consultants and the client and enjoyed Christmas functions on the harbour and things like that. So, yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, good transition from the Taranaki to Auckland then.
Yes. Auckland's been kind to us. Still is.
Mm.
So you sort of touched on, the moving away from rural contracting and things like that because of financial times and stuff like that. Obviously, there would have been some pretty big challenges that you would have come across during your sort of your career and everything like that. So what were some of the main challenges that you've sort of seen and come through over the sort of the period of time?
Look, I can't recall anything other than just had to find work. So it's just like if you're hungry and you're hunting, I suppose you've got to find something to eat, and that's pretty much what I was focused on. I don't recall the details of what you're asking me, but it's just a matter of survival, I suppose. You have to survive, don't you?
Yeah, look after your family and look after the people that are working for you. Yes.
Yeah.
And so have you found it quite rewarding over time as well? Sort of, obviously, you'd have met a lot of people and stuff like that. You found it quite rewarding with looking back at some of the projects and some of the people that have come along that way with you? Because I can imagine that would have some pretty good rewards in hindsight too.
Yes, I've built up some great relationships. We had some great staff working for us. God, some skilled people worked for us, like, we had a workshop with engineers and mechanics, and we could pretty much build anything or fix anything. We converted a rubbish compactor to an earth compactor because wheel sizes are different and the compaction things are different to a compactor to earth one. And I was very proud of the work they did. It was a very high standard.
Was there anything that sort of stood out that that you can think of, I suppose, all these years later, in terms of maybe a job that the team did, maybe from a servicing perspective, that you thought, geez, the guys did really well with that?
Well, that compact of wheels was pretty good, I thought. Excellent. And we built our own workshops and everything in Auckland and Egmont Village. So we did most things in-house, apart from specialist stuff with coughs and that. And I think when I first started with the 9UD6, a fellow, Bob Bryan, came to, he used to work for the Ministry of Works as a mechanic in New Plymouth, but he'd come up every afternoon after 4 o'clock and work for me till dark. And there was nothing he couldn't fix or make. And he was so clever about what was wrong with something. He didn't need to fit a part and then another part and another part. He's almost like he had X-ray eyes to see what was. He was. He still is. It's Bob Bryan. So the business built up on strength of him and other people like him. Peter Reesby in the workshop and a whole lot of good people and support of golfs, and they've had some really good people there.
Mm. Yeah, we might talk about a few characters from the golf days a little bit later. I think we've got a question coming up on that. So, now, your wife Teresa played a huge role in supporting you and the family in the business.
Yes.
How important was she for you over all of those years with Hurlstones?
Well, very important, I suppose, now, but I mean, I didn't think much about that at the time. We just did what we did. I never saw my children born or he would drop her off at a nursing home and then pick them up when, a few days later or whatever, but we'll go and see them at night. But, yeah, so I think I didn't see my children grow up. Well, I didn't have much to do with bringing them up because I was sort of had to work.
Yeah, sort of working from dawn till dusk, I suppose, you know, 5 or 6 days a week.
Yep.
Yep.
7 days a week.
7 days, yeah.
When it was fine.
Yes, of course.
It's always fine in Taranaki, isn't it?
Well, sometimes. Yeah. No, Teresa was great. Yeah.
And what about, you mentioned some other people before within your team, you know, some of the key staff that worked in the workshop and the like. What about some other people in the industry over the years that have supported you? Is there anyone that sort of springs to mind in that space?
Well, some consultants, I suppose. And then Graham Christensen, who was a surveyor in New Plymouth, that he liked. We got on really good, and so he had to satisfy his clients, and we were able to do that for him. So it wasn't hard for him to give us more work on that basis. And it was had a good relationship.
Yeah, because I know when we spoke, you know, previously you'd sort of talked about, I think, like Bob Bowen, who was, you know, the branch manager at Palmerston North, if I'm correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and Hurricane, who was one of the old reps, who sort of looked after you, I think, in the Taranaki, but...
No, yeah, sorry.
Yes.
Bob Bowen was a salesman before he became branch manager.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah.
And he was a good salesperson because he was quietly spoken, but everybody liked dealing with Bob. I never met anybody that didn't like dealing with Bob. And I think we did deals just to please him. Not sort of, but he was a quiet fellow, but he could sell. He sold some plant.
He sold a bit of cat gear to you then?
Yes, I bought my first new digger through Bob Bowen, and he used to stay at home as well, so at nights, you know, like sometimes. So that's relationship we had. And same with Hurricane John Hamilton from Hamilton. He was a character. He would come down and walk into the yard and say, "I'll take that and that, and I'll give you this much, and you're buying this, okay?" Sign here. Sometimes within half an hour, you've done the deal. I don't know whether it was good for both sides or not.
Made it nice and easy for you, though.
We used to go out just about every week. He came down for a meal. It was quite incredible. And the wife came as well.
Of course, of course.
So we had a lot of fun as well.
So you've sort of spoken about having a very large sort of fleet and growing your fleet to quite a large pace. You would have seen a range of different technologies right from the early days through to the later days with different machinery and stuff like that. Are there any that sort of stick out as like a great model or a great piece of equipment at, you know, not necessarily just the early stuff, but some of the later stuff, or at one point in time that you sort of picked on as a great piece of machinery?
I thought the biggest thing that I'd seen change was a hydraulic excavator, because they could do a lot of things a lot easier than a bulldozer. And that was the biggest gain. They were the best thing that came along, I thought, for earth moving contractors, because they just made so many jobs so much easier, especially the track ones. I mean, yes, they became you could shift dirt with a bucket and put it on a truck and do a whole lot of things that made life easy.
And definitely suited New Zealand conditions probably a lot more as well, with a move from sort of bulldozer type earth moving to excavator type earth moving in New Zealand and that too.
Yes.
So yeah, I can imagine it would have been a bit of a game changer for the way that you operated and did things.
Yes.
Other than the sort of machinery side of things, is there anything else that stands out as far as big changes that you've seen? Sort of things like safety or, you know, the way projects were run or anything like that?
Oh, well, I suppose the computer's taken over a bit with a lot of things now, with maintenance and even level of your blade and things all controlled by that now. You know, laser levels or whatever they call it now. It's just, yeah, it's quite something, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Definitely big changes, I can imagine, in the way that you see sort of projects run. And I understand that you've sort of seen and had a look at some of the later projects in New Zealand and things like that.
Yes.
I can imagine that'd be quite eye-opening for you.
Well, when you had a bulldozer, that you, blade that you had to get off and do the turnbuckles manually to alter the level of your cut or whatever you were doing to just using a hydraulic lever, there's quite a lot of difference. And, yeah, things have moved on. But we didn't know any different at the time.
Any cool projects or gear that you've more recently seen that you might have been exposed to that you thought, yeah, that's pretty cool in terms of a project that you might have been taken over more recently?
Well, probably a grader without a steering wheel and things like that.
Yeah, you wouldn't be the only one there, I think. So, Marty, what do you want to say about that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of operators that found that as a big change in the way that they do things.
Yeah.
I suppose changing tact away from contracting.
Yeah.
I know you have a passion for horse racing.
Yes.
Where's that interest come from?
I bought a horse for our daughter once, and so it started from there. And it came, it was bought from the Waikato sales, and it came home at midnight, so off the float, so the wife called it Midnight Lady, and we built up a family from that, really. Had a bit of success here and there. And
yeah, tell us a little bit about that, because yeah, you just didn't have the odd winner here and there. You actually were pretty, very successful.
She, as a two-year-old, she won Welcome Stakes here in Christchurch, which was on yesterday, I think.
Yeah. Yes, that middle day of the Cup week here in Christchurch in November, yes.
Yes, and it won the James Sarton Memorial at Waikato. And then this family of a daughter won a trophy in Adelaide and almost won the Yokes in Queensland. And then I've had the odd one like called Perlin that was owned by a Australian casino owner, can't think of his name, but Graham Rogerson trained at Cork Perlin, that won about $1 million Australian, and Hardline, another one we bred, won Karaka Million a few years back.
Yeah, and that's a huge race now, so
yes.
It must have been a massive thrill to be, you would have been on the track.
Yes,
watching and sharing at home.
Yeah. Yes, it was, so that's a good, yes. That's it's quite a thrill to watch a horse win a race, but that doesn't happen that often, and it's quite expensive, but anyway, it's good when they win.
And so you're down here in Christchurch this week. What's some of the things that you've been up to this week, and what do you do to keep yourself busy these days?
I've got 30 acres Egmont Village that I go to every day because we live in New Plymouth now.
Yeah.
So I've got stock to shift, and that pretty much fills the day in, and I've got some property in Auckland that I go and look after now and again what I need to. But that's pretty much it, I think.
It does still sound quite busy to keep you occupied.
Busy as I want to be, yeah.
not quite 7 days a week, though.
No. Well, I do go out there 7 days a week, but I don't have to.
Of course, yes, yeah, definitely.
And how about as far as sort of the earth-moving industry or the contracting industry, do you still have much to do with the industry, and do you still sort of keep in touch with people and things like that?
Through Ho, I do, yep. and other Caterpillar people, but...
Oh, that's through Ho Hog, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's been a very good friend. Terry Locke. Had a trip overseas with Terry once.
Yeah, he would have looked after you. That might have, was that a trip to ConExpo, was it?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, he's a good host, Terry. Yeah. And a good friend as well.
Mm.
We communicate quite a bit. Yeah. So Caterpillar have been good to us. Very good. And Goff family, of course. And Terry Cat now, but Goff name will be never forgotten, I don't think.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people in the industry that would agree with you on that, and they sort of they know the new name in terms of Terra, but yeah, that Goff family and Goff name certainly won't be forgotten anytime soon, that's for sure. Well, Bill, it's been a really, it's been excellent catching up with you. I'd really like to thank you for coming on Breaking Ground. It's been great chatting with you today. And thanks so much to all our listeners. We hope you've enjoyed today's conversation with Bill.
Thank you so much for coming along, Bill. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So, as always, we'd love your feedback. So, get in touch with us. Send us a message on any one of TerraCat's social media channels. And please keep an eye on TerraCat's Facebook page for details about next month's episode of Breaking Ground.
Goodbye.